Welcome to We've Got Issues. I'm Joshua Holler, and this week we're going to speak with Mike Rothschild. Mike is a researcher and journalist who focuses on QAnon and other, I guess, other extremist movements, and he has a book coming out in the fall. First, as always, I'm joined by Liz Preza, Alternet's managing editor. Hi, Liz. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm pretty outraged about one story this week, though, above all others. And I think it's hard to say. This may be the thing that bothers me most about what Donald Trump has done in office, and that is pardoning the Blackwater mercenaries who were convicted for the Nisour Square massacre in Iraq. And I covered this story. I remember covering this in 2007 and subsequently, because it was no easy task to bring these guys to justice. And for people who don't remember what this was, these were these four American quote-unquote military contractors. They were ordered to remain in the green zone. They defied those orders. They went out into Iraq to Nisour Square in central Baghdad. They shut down the square and they just started shooting Iraqi civilians in cars, unarmed Iraqi civilians in cars. They killed 17 of them. I think the youngest was 8 or 9 years old, blew his brains out. And the thing that I find so troubling about this, and I should point out Trump also has pardoned a bunch of, of corrupt Republican office holders, a couple of people caught up in the Russian probe, et cetera, et cetera. But what's so troublesome about this is that, this is something that happened 13 years ago, and there was no, these guys were not a wingnut cause celeb. You know what I'm saying? There was no group on Fox News. There was nobody agitating for letting these guys off because this was too egregious for the right, for people on the right to defend at the time. Mm-hmm. Nobody was in the corner of these fucking goons who blew away 17 unarmed civilians for no apparent reason, right? There was no like Kyle Rittenhouse contingency here, right? There was no group that was like, yeah, they're heroes. They were acting in self-defense. But the connection and the only thing that I can see that caused this to happen is Eric Prince, of course, is a Trump insider. These were his guys, Betsy DeVos is the Secretary of Education, Prince's cousin. That's all.
Yeah.
Right? If there's another reason, I don't know what it could possibly be.
Yeah. And Eric Prince has been, on Trump's team since before the election, because he was caught up in like the meeting in the Seychelles.
Seychelles.
Yeah. I can never figure out how that word is pronounced. But yeah, he's been in Trump's corner this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. And he came up with that proposal to replace U.S. troops in Afghanistan with his own private army. And he's just a really, he's a movie bad guy is what he is. He's almost too evil to be a real person. And these guys are off, and it's just, again, 17 dead civilians. They have families. They were just going about their business. It's so egregious. Yeah. And I don't know why it bothers me more than everything else, but it does. It just makes me almost physically ill.
I'm sickened
by this whole thing. And you know what? I expected him to pardon, all of his cronies. And I expected that, right? I expected that. I expected him to basically pardon anybody who has the ear of a big Republican donor.
Yeah.
Right? Any white person with the ear of a big Republican donor, I figured would get a pardon. Because there was a report a week or two ago in Politico or Axios, one of those insidery gossip rags, about how Trump was like, just saying, I'm going to give everybody pardons. When people came to visit him, he'd be like, do you want a pardon? I'll give you a pardon. And it was making some people uncomfortable because he would be like, do you want a pardon? And they'd be like, I didn't commit a crime. I don't need a pardon. I didn't do anything wrong. So, I mean, you know, okay, we expected this to a degree, but yeah. This is just, it's just, again, there was nobody pushing for this.
Yeah. No, he just did it.
Just did it.
Because he can.
Yeah, just because he can. They were brown people that were killed.
Yeah.
It's maddening. And so this is in the context. We're recording this on Wednesday, by the way, so that we can get things done before Christmas Eve. And so right now there's this, you know, there was finally like a deal. And this is a last minute deal to pass a stimulus bill of $900 billion in stimulus and fund the government beyond next week.
Right.
Right. These two things were linked because you can't get Republicans to pass a relief bill unless it's attached to a must pass spending bill.
Must pass spending, right. But not on the American people, really.
Yeah. So they work out all this. So somehow they come up with this agreement and
insane package also.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's woefully insufficient, by the way, this package that they passed. But at least it's something because, you know, people need something.
It's been, what, 10 months of this pandemic and American people have gotten $1,200 from their government.
So that's, I mean, that's a little misleading because the unemployment benefits were really rich. And they pumped a lot of money into working people who had been unemployed. And also, by the way, the enhanced unemployment benefits were also available for people who didn't have a traditional job like you know, gig workers and stuff like that. I actually think that the unemployment, enhanced unemployment benefits were bigger than the stimulus checks and a bigger issue here. And I would have traded a stimulus check for more enhanced unemployment.
Right.
Because it's targeted at the people who are hurting the most. Because
they went from $600. It was originally $600 a week to $300 a week.
But the $600 a week expired months ago.
Right, in July or something like that.
I don't remember exactly when. Yeah, July, August, something like that. And so, you know, we need something. But so Trump comes out and he says he's going to veto this package because it doesn't have a $2,000 stimulus check. He wants a $2,000 stimulus check, which, you know, by the way, Democrats have been calling for since they passed a bill, I don't even remember how long ago. I think that was in, I don't know, May, a long time ago, the $3.2 trillion House relief bill. And they've been saying all along that they want bigger checks. So they said, okay, well, look, if Trump wants $2,000 stimulus checks, we are absolutely happy to provide that. Which jams up Republicans right before, 15 days before these two Georgia Senate races are settled, because Mitch McConnell's whole story is, you know, he's been telling people that it's been the Democrats who have been holding up relief, which is, you know, a ludicrous lie. But here we have Trump and the Democrats on one side saying, let's get $2,000 in stimulus. And it really screws up the story that Mitch McConnell's been telling, and it throws into stark relief the stakes of those Senate races. I don't know what's going on, but I will say this. One thing that I'm finding annoying is that everybody is taking Trump's bloviation at face value, like he really wants $2,000 stimulus checks, when all he had to do was lean on Senate Republicans to get $2,000 stimulus checks during the process. In other words, he has absented himself from these negotiations while he's having his meltdown over losing the election.
Right. But then he couldn't put out, you know, this well-produced multi-camera statement saying, no, this isn't good enough. I want $2,000.
Yes, you know? yes, exactly.
Working through the traditional channels wouldn't have given him this headline,
that opportunity. But it absolutely fucks over McConnell and Perdue and Loeffler in Georgia. Oh, by the way, that video is just, it's the height, it's honestly, it's the height of Idiocracy, because what they do is, and the right does this all the time, right? So they'll look at these big spending bills, $900 billion. They'll be like, there's $50 million in it for like whatever.
Right.
You know, foreign aid to Afghanistan. Why is Afghanistan getting $50 million? And by the way, that's, I don't want to advance misinformation. The foreign aid is not part of the stimulus bill. It is part of the budget.
The omnibus
spending right. bill. And here's the crazy thing. So Trump made this speech and he said, why are we giving, you know, money to these foreign countries and blah, blah, blah. He was misleading people about, you know,
what was in the bill.
But here's the thing. Those were all of the things that he was railing about.
Came from the White House.
Came from his budget request.
Yep. Yep. I know. It's really, well, I mean, not that he has any idea what was in his own budget request, you know.
Fair point. No, that's fair.
yeah, but it's comedic, I guess. I don't know. It's so close to him being out.
It's hilarifying. It's hilarious and terrifying. Hilarifying. Yeah. And we are really in, as Chris Hayes would say, a liminal space. I don't know why Chris Hayes loves saying liminal space, but we're in this liminal space between, you know, this complete clown show and a real coup. And it's really, it's been, I think I talked about this on a previous episode. It's just, it's weird to be, you know, to see this coup attempt progressing, slowly progressing. Trump just invited every Republican in the Pennsylvania legislature to lunch, right? Just today as we're reporting this. So he keeps going on with his coup. There's reports that he's like basically frozen out everybody in the White House who's telling him he can't reverse the results of the election, and he's embracing all these conspiracy cranks. He's got Mike Flynn in the White House telling him to declare martial law. And then at the same time, it's just all so fucking stupid. How terrified should we be? Well, I don't know. These people are absolutely inept. And you have, you know, Mitch McConnell, evil as he is, saying, yeah, well, this is the Electoral College is voted, this is a done deal, and I don't know.
It's all very weird. I mean, you know, it started, think about like back when he was president-elect, and it was like he just paraded all of those people through Trump Tower, and there were cameras staked out outside of the gold elevators in Trump Tower, and he would come down and wave with all the people that he was meeting with. And it's like this weird inverse of that, like the logical conclusion to this 4 years of insanity.
I mean, there is a certain symmetry, though, in terms of the beginning and the end, in that they started with this raising huge amounts of money for an inaugural, and we don't know what happened to that money, and then raising huge amounts of money to ostensibly to contest the results of the election. And we don't know where that money is either. Right. Going. So it's just, we know that it started with a grift and it's ending.
It's definitely ending with one.
Ending with a big old grift. Yeah.
On a more serious note, there are one story I want to bring to readers' attention. I don't know if you saw this, but the FBI said that an Ohio teenager was arrested for plotting an attack on the U.S. power grid. He was a white supremacist who planned on carrying out an attack on the U.S. power grid in the summer of 2021.
Great.
Yeah, great. So, you know, as funny and crazy and ridiculous as this presidency has been, it's like, oh, yeah, there were real implications to that.
Oh, man. So, this started with the Canadian Nazi, right?
Yeah.
So this Canadian Nazi was stopped at the border and began, and I guess this was either early this year or last year, I don't remember, but they stopped this Canadian Nazi at the border, and he was on his way to visit this teenager who was going to blow up. I mean, this is really serious stuff. We'll be talking to Mike Rothschild in a minute about these guys, but You know, and I'm lumping them all together, white supremacists, QAnon, whatever. They're all cut from the same kind of conspiratorial, potentially right. violent cloth.
They're like this particular one was the Adam Waffen.
Division. Yeah, Adam Waffen. Yeah.
They're like basically a group of like doomsday preppers.
Yeah. And they have killed numerous people so
right,
far.
Right, right.
So they're like not they're not just guys talking on the internet.
They're
these
like pro-collapse. They're a pro-collapse group, basically.
Yeah, well, that wasn't that the ultimate thing that they wanted to
accelerationism, yeah.
Accelerationism, right? Yeah. Bring down society and then you can replace it with a white supremacist fascist mm-hmm. order, new order. And you know, look, there's another story that's, you know, semi-related to this. Axios reports that incoming House freshmen, a bunch of them, right? You have all these fringe right wingers, and they want to bring their guns into Congress, mm-hmm. right? And
to protect them from the government.
Yeah, I don't even know, but you know, it's so the Capitol complex is exempt and from local gun laws, and lawmakers can set their own rules, and there's a ban on carrying them into the chambers right now. Mm-hmm. So they're allowed to bring guns in, but the there are areas where they're not allowed to have guns. And then these are you know, crazy freshmen. I think people don't really understand how extreme the Republican caucus is going to be next year. I mean, right. It's just, you've got the young Nazi, what's his name?
The one in North Carolina.
Yeah, I guess he's not a Nazi, but he really likes Hitler.
Yeah, he certainly looks like one.
Well, he does. He has that fashy look. He certainly does. Got a couple QAnon lunatics. Yeah, he's just going to be. Green. Yeah. And Boebert, what's her name? Who mm-hmm. claims she has disavowed QAnon, but she did that for politics.
Yeah.
Anyway, everything's going swimmingly in this country.
It's been really just one hell of a year.
What a year, man. Yeah. This is our last show for 2020, by the way. We're taking next week off. And yeah, it's been a hell of a ride.
I look forward to 2021 being not a single bit better.
I mean, I feel like it should be a little better.
What do you think? You would hope. I'm not going to get my hopes up because then I can be pleasantly surprised. The alternative is just too devastating for me.
Honestly, that's a smart strategy. It's a smart strategy. Meanwhile, yesterday, that is Tuesday, we had the most COVID-19 deaths ever before. And a very, very vocal, small minority of the population, including lots of influencers, conservative influencers, are still claiming that it's not a big deal. And mm-hmm. it's all being exaggerated by the press to hurt Trump, even though he already lost. I don't even understand what the fuck that's about. But well, yeah.
you wouldn't want COVID to ruin Christmas.
Yes, you wouldn't want COVID to ruin Christmas. And on that note, let's take a quick break and then come back with Mike Rothschild to talk about more crazy stuff. Liz, I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and New Year's break.
Me too.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm still Joshua Holland, I'm joined now by Mike Rothschild. Mike is a conspiracy theory researcher and debunker. You've probably seen him quoted in every single article about QAnon. He's also working on a book that's out in the fall. We'll have him back on when the book comes out. It's called The Storm Is Upon Us. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. Can I just ask you first, I mean, this is, I follow you on Twitter, of course. You're actually the source of most of my QAnon crank news, to tell you the truth. You know, I also follow Ben Collins and others. Sure. But your last name is Rothschild, which has a very, very kind of rich history in conspiracy circles. Yeah, how does that work out for you?
A lot of cranks Twitter DMing me, telling me that I'm going to burn in hell for all my money. in which I, if I do reply, I always say something like, if I had, you know, trillions of dollars, would I be hanging out on Twitter talking about conspiracy theories? And they never answer.
Would I be dealing with you, with a crazy person like you, if I had sitting on Rothschild money?
I would never go online. I wouldn't know what social media was. Like, I would just be on a yacht and drink my wine and, like, you know, entertain politicians and movie stars.
Yeah, well, you'd have an assistant to wade through the fever swamps and report back for you. So, okay, so that's the Rothschild name is obviously an old anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, and that is something that is common with QAnon, right? It goes back. People treat this like it is something new, but it really, if you talk about like the blood libel, where Jews would kill Christian babies purportedly to use their blood to make matzah. That goes back, what, hundreds of years, right?
Yeah, that's the 1100s. You know, that's as old as the hills, basically. The idea that Jews, you know, are poisoning Christians, are mutilating Christians in you know, rituals and with idols and all kinds of stuff. That's all been around forever.
So now we have the modern iteration of it, and I'm sure most listeners are aware of what we're talking about. But in case you've been, say, traveling in the Himalayas or something, we are talking about the belief that a cabal of Democrats and Hollywood actors, including Tom Hanks, which, by the way, is he's such a benevolent character to have been wrapped into this, are they harvest the a substance called adrenochrome from children after they molest them, and they use this adrenochrome to prolong their lives and have a better health and not lose their hair or whatnot, and Donald Trump is secretly fighting this cabal with the U.S. military and JFK Jr., who is not dead but is actually a kind of scruffy looking guy that shows up at all sorts of Trump events.
Yeah.
So the difference here, though, is how widespread this has become. And I think I would ask you to speak to how you think that came to be. Because the other conspiracy theories that we've talked about, and QAnon has been referred to as the kind of a big burrito of all previous conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Those were somewhat relegated to the fringes.
Yeah, I think the sort of mainstreaming of QAnon has really gone hand in hand with the pandemic. You know, for the first year and a half that Q was around, it was very fringe. It was very much sort of like a secret club. You had to know the language. You had to know the catchphrases. You had to know where to read the drops, how to interpret them. It was just a little too weird for most people. But when the pandemic hit, you suddenly had this enormous world-changing event that kind of came out of nowhere, immediately overturned everything and affected everybody. And when you have something like that, conspiracy theories become the primary way to explain it, because otherwise the explanations are either we got caught completely unaware by this pandemic, or Donald Trump actively made it worse. And if you are a right-wing MAGA person, you're never going to believe that Donald Trump made anything worse. He's always right. He's always the hero. Whatever happened here was, you know, was either on purpose or totally out of his control. So the conspiracy theories to explain why all of this was going on had to not talk about the incompetence of the Trump administration. So it had to pin the blame on everything else. And Q is very good at taking world events and kind of consuming them and then spitting them back out into the mythology. So all of the, you know, all the conspiracy theories that were normally thought of as far left, you know, anti-vax stuff, anti-5G stuff, you know, wellness and quack cures and things like that, that all got pulled into the pandemic. And it was ripe for people to find one of those conspiracy theories and then find another one and then find another one. And then eventually they get led to Q and they're like, oh, well, that makes sense. I guess Hillary Clinton could be a demon. I guess Trump maybe isn't as stupid as we think he is. It all makes sense now. So you had people who were home alone with nothing to do and very little money coming in, probably not much work. And they just got bored and went down conspiracy rabbit holes, and one leads to another, and then you find Q.
And this is all driven in part, at least, by social media algorithms, right? I mean, how does this get into, you know, it starts off with this kind of, you know, QAnon, 4chan, 8chan, these right-wing kind of fever swamp websites. And then, as you mentioned, it ends up in these, like, homeopathic communities and mom blogs, like mom Facebook groups. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you have a population of people that are very susceptible to not believing what they're told. And in the case of things like, you know, natural parenting or holistic healing, it's that there's a vast conspiracy, but it's not the government. Well, it is the government, but it's mostly the pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical right. companies work with the government to suppress the real cures and to keep us sick and make lots of money off us. That dovetails really easily into QAnon. And what was going on was that these things were starting to pop up in groups that really had nothing to do with traditional conspiracy theories. And on platforms like Instagram, where, you know, Instagram wellness influencers who have these huge audiences who are exposing this stuff to people who have never seen it before. And a lot of these influencers, you can really tell that this is something that has very quickly become important to them because they're sharing it in their private spaces, not as part of like their public branding. So these people got sucked into this because it offered up an explanation for what was going on. And the people who follow these influencers liked that explanation. And so they got sucked into it too. And it's very easy. You know, it's not, social media doesn't turn people into conspiracy theorists. It maybe puts these things in front of them, but ultimately you have to believe that these things are true in order to, you know, watch that YouTube video or join that QAnon Facebook group. Nobody can do that for you. An algorithm can sort of present you with things, but you're the one who has to say, yes, I want that.
I think one of the things that I have a hard time understanding is, you know, so you're someone who's stuck at home, you're going through all these things. It seems odd to me that people don't notice or refuse to take into consideration how nakedly partisan and political these things are. I mean, it just seems to me that when you're looking at these things and you're seeing it's all these Democrats and all of these liberals and everything like that. Certainly that's not something that's reflected by news accounts when you see, you know, stories of actual children being abducted. Right. You know, the abuse is not ideologically, you know, isolated. It seems like, you know, just one would think that would trigger some sort of suspicion on people's parts that they're being manipulated.
Yeah, people never suspect it, though. Nobody wants to feel like they're stupid and that they are allowing themselves to be misled. So rather than say, this Q thing has gone on for a while and none of these things have actually happened, maybe this is all bogus, they invent reasons why it just hasn't happened yet because they don't want to admit to themselves that they wasted their time. You know, you see this all the time in long-running affinity fraud scams. It's one of the things I'm writing about for the book is these kind of precursor scams to QAnon, which were very similar. You had a, you know, almost mystical guru who was dispensing intel about a great world-changing event that was about to come, and there's always a reason why it never happened. So you had, you see that with like economic proposals, you see that with currency speculation. You know, the riches are always almost about to come, but they never actually come. And by that point, you've invested so much of your money and time into this that you just can't walk away from it. Because what if you walk away and then it happens? You know, you'll be this, you'll be the dummy who didn't wait long enough. So people just get sucked in and they convince themselves to stay.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard QAnon often compared with end time cults, where, you know, there's a predicted date where the end of the world is going to come. It doesn't come. And then the cult leaders and the and their followers adapt. And they say, oh, we misread the stars, or we got the date wrong. But right, really, it's now it's going to be coming. So we have this, we have a real life kind of wall that we're going to hit on January 20th. When Joe Biden is sworn in as the 46th president. And of course, you know, we can joke. I mean, I have joked repeatedly that, you know, probably Trump should have made saving the children a first term agenda, right?
Yeah.
Like, you probably don't wait until the second term for the saving the babies from the pedo cannibals.
Right, but sure, you'd think.
You'd think, right? I mean, it should be kind of high priority. But so what happens with this group? I mean, you have this of significant share of the public that has, you know, decided that the coronavirus is at least exaggerated by nefarious forces to hurt, right, Donald Trump. Now we have this entire stolen election narrative, which has been folded into this, right? There's overlap between all these groups. You see the Stop the Steal,
yeah,
stuff proliferating in fora for COVID denialism and in QAnon fora. Where does this all go? I mean, I'm asking you to predict the future, but, you know,
right,
how do you see it going?
It's really hard to tell. You know, I think the next month is going to be what we've already seen, this endless stream of like wackadoodle plots for Trump to overturn the election. And it's like, well, one doesn't go his way, there's always another one. You know, the lawsuits all get thrown out. Well, the Electoral College won't certify, or they'll send duplicate electors. And, well, that's not working. Mike Pence will throw out the fraudulent electors and award Trump the votes. I mean, it's just one thing after another. And yeah, you're right, there is a hard deadline here. January 20th at noon Eastern, Joe Biden's going to be the president. And right there, you've got maybe the biggest disconfirmation that will ever hit this movement.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that most of these people will continue right on believing. They it will all get folded into the grand plan. Like, Trump needed to be out of power in order to expose the corruption of the powerful people, and then the people will be begging Trump to come back, or whatever. You know, whatever nonsensical excuse they use for why Trump had to lose, even though he desperately tried to overturn his losing. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, and there's no reason to try to make sense of it. The thing that I'm concerned about is that if even a very small number of these people just completely break with reality and realize that but, you know, Biden's in and Trump is out and they're never going to get what they want, and they snap, and that's when violence happens. And you have a lot of Q people who are really driven by kind of voices in their heads and by a delusional outlook that Trump is personally speaking to them and directing their actions. I've seen that with numerous Q crimes, and people think Trump or Q are directly speaking to them, and they're doing their part to stop the deep state, so they shoot somebody. Biden being inaugurated is kind of the ultimate victory of the deep state, and I think there will be a few people who are just not going to let that pass.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all worried about the kind of lone wolf terror attacks that inevitably that seem inevitable, and obviously there has been already several incidents of QAnon fueled violence. There was the mob boss who was murdered in New Jersey, by a guy who thought he was part of the deep state,
who went there to citizens arrest him,
right?
Why this guy? Like, you had never talked about the mafia before. Like, this Frank Cali was really low profile. Like, nobody even knew who he was.
I mean, it seems like that's consistent with the kind of obsessive nature that these people often seem to exhibit, where they're spending hours researching obscure connections. And I mean, what do we know how the murderer made that connection in his head?
I don't. And he didn't get it from any of the major QAnon media because they'd never mentioned him before. I mean, I have no idea what led him to that guy.
Yeah.
It's a total mystery.
I mean, I think that the thing that is also makes this more, I don't want to say appealing, but credible to ordinary people is just the source, the powers of the people who are, I don't want to say promulgating it, but at least giving a wink and a nod to it. And that goes all the way up to the President of the United States, who, when offered an opportunity to condemn QAnon, said that they were very strong on fighting child abuse.
Yes.
And demurred and skipped that opportunity. And the thing that has been striking to me since the very beginning is that, you know, Donald Trump is himself a conspiracy theorist. And that is a specific way of explaining the world that is usually embraced by people who are powerless, to kind of explain how they've ended up in such a poor position despite or deserving more, being, you know, being intelligent and hardworking, whatever, however they can conceive of themselves. And here you have Donald Trump, you know, born wealthy, very powerful, has achieved the highest power, the presidency of the United States, and he's spewing conspiracy theories throughout the entirety of his presidency. And he, you know, those conspiracy theories are, to an extent, reflected on Fox News, the nation's top rated cable TV, cable news network. And then to a much more explicit degree on some of the crackpot networks, the OANs and Newsmaxes. And, you know, it gives somebody who is motivated to believe this a seemingly credible source of validation.
Yeah, Trump began his ascendancy in politics with conspiracy theories. You know, he first really sort of appeared on the radar of Republicans when he was questioning where Barack Obama was born. You know, it's only gone downhill from there. So it's absolutely no surprise that Trump shares this stuff habitually. It's absolutely no surprise that in the last days of his administration, he's surrounding himself with cranks and crackpots and flatterers and people who believe the same insane stuff that he does. And all of these networks desperately want to be seen by him. You know, they you know, people call it the audience of one. It's like you have a whole network that's just designed to flatter Donald Trump. So you're going to put stuff on it that he likes, and he really likes conspiracy theories. So it's no surprise at all that he validates these people. They worship him. And, you know, when presented a chance to disavow a violent, unhinged movement like QAnon, he's not going to do that. And it has nothing to do with him believing it's true or not believing it's true. I have no idea if it's true. But these are his people. They are hardcore MAGA people. They worship him. They venerate him. He's not going to say anything that's going to turn those people away. He's going to feed them. He's going to make him think he's one of them. He's always done that. He's always made you think he's just like you. Well, he's not just like you. He was born into millions, and he's never had anything in common with the working man who worships him so much. So it's all just very bizarre and very sort of twisted psychology and just people who are desperately looking for someone to tell them what to do, and they found a guy they like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's hard to overstate how much contempt Trump actually has for little people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, he's been known that way for a very long time in New York circles. But I mean, ultimately, this is just fundamentally incompatible with democracy, because, you know, it's one thing to have differences of opinion, but we have a significant chunk of the population that just exists in a parallel universe where, you know, there's dark and light and good versus evil. And, you know, they're things are percolating in a way that, you know, that ultimately leads them to just this well of crack pottery, and it's extremely destructive. It really is.
Yeah.
Complete nightmare. Anyway, Mike, I believe we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I really do appreciate it.
Sure. I'm happy to be on.
And let's have you back when the book comes out in the fall.
I would love to do that.
I'd also like to thank Liz Prezza and David Edwards, our producer and engineer, and the good folks at Alternet and Ross Story for supporting the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Hall, H-O-L, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you folks for tuning in and for tuning in throughout this year. Have a terrific 2 weeks. Have a terrific holiday break, whatever you celebrate, and we'll be back, I think, January 7th. In the eyes of my sweet, my darling, live the brightest of stars. How could I ever bottle this morning? You and I in a winter's night. Gently and tenderly, I hold you closer, my heart gets warmer tonight. Can you hear the songs in the wind, the church?